Previously on Outcast, Ron Jacobs.
My favorite feature of the whole thing is it's free. Excellent.
Don Smith.
I was hoping if I didn't mention that, they might send me the money.
Mark Cousin.
Of course, part of the problem is because of that, can be insecure because, you know, your password can be the name of your dog.
Dwayne Taylor.
Passwords are inherently weak from a cryptographic standpoint. It's
Oh, yeah. We have way too much fun around here. You know, it's funny because there's always somebody on the evaluations for these who goes, "Oh, please, you guys are laughing too much. Oh, just quit the dumb sound effects and stuff like that." I know that most of you like it, but there's a few kind of noisy complainer people who think we have to be more serious. But hey, this is ArtCast, and I am your host, Ron Jacobs, and we're not going to be serious, okay? Except for that, we're going to have serious information, but we're going to have fun getting to it. And that's what we're doing today with our guest for the second half of the Web Services Security Patterns Securing WSI 3.0 with Username Tokens, ArtCast, okay? So we have a mouthful and a lot to come, so let's listen in to the ArtCast already in progress. Well, see, I think, you know, I can imagine a lot of situations where people are wanting to have kind of, you know, partners or vendors or whatever, and they don't want to necessarily set up a Windows domain account for that person to be able to collaborate with them so they could build some kind of custom token solution, right? Okay, but there are some considerations. We talked a little bit about passwords being susceptible to offline attacks.
Right, and again, it just goes back to it's a piece of sensitive data. It's the keys to the kingdom as far as the that user identity is concerned. So if someone gets a hold of that, they can effectively, you know, convince someone else that they are that user, which is probably a bad thing.
Yeah, that's true. And then, of course, interoperability. We talked about these WSecurity 1.1 extensions. So if we want to be fully compatible, we're just going to do username token, transport security, uncheck that 1.1 box, and we're just doing WSI 1.0.
Or, yeah, WSecurity.
Security 1.0, yep. Right. That's right. Okay. And then, so the X509 certificate private key. What are the issues there?
Well, on the service side, the service has to have its X509 certificate installed in the certificate store, along with the private key, so that it can decrypt the messages, the sensitive data that the client sends, and it's very important to make sure that the ACLs are set on that private key, so that only the absolute minimum parties can access that. Usually, for example, if you set up an account under which the service runs, a domain account, you would grant access to private key just for that domain account to read it.
Okay, so, you know, the default would be like my service runs as network service, and so someone might go, well, I'm just going to grant network service the rights to read that key.
Ooh!
Bad idea.
Yeah, unless, you know, if you feel like you can, you know, you're comfortable enough in doing that, you can probably get away with it. But generally, you want to set up a domain account or a specific account for that service to run under and grant permissions that way.
Okay. And all right. So some options in the code you were showing about with the password, there were some options and you had plain text. But there's some other options here for password. Mark, what are those options?
Oh, well, these options are determined by WSI in terms of how you can send a password. The most obvious one is send plain text, and that basically, as Dwayne alluded to earlier, is you send the actual text that the user typed in on the wire. Of course, it's protected, and so it's not.
It might be protected if the policy said so.
Send hashed is whereby you actually hash the password. You provide a hashing algorithm like PSHA-1, which basically seems to cryptographically. It's a one-way hash. It turns it into some value, which means that it was completely different from the original password you typed in. And what you can do on the WSI side is you can have a hashed password that you store there, and you can just compare the two hashes. So that's a common scenario whereby you may have hashes in a store that you have yourself, say in SQL Server Store. You can pull those hashes out and using a custom username token manager, say to Wizzy, here's the hashed value, I have the password. You send a hashed value on the wire. It's indicated in the message that this is a hashed typed password as opposed to a clear text password. And so Wizzy knows that these two things just match in terms of the hash, and so you authenticate the user.
Well, and that's a very important point here is that hashing the password is not the same as encrypting it, but because you would still want to protect the message with some other way, right? Either transport or policy.
Yeah, a lot of people think that because they've hashed a password, it's made them more secure. Well, yes, a tiny bit. The end result is that you can still do these so-called dictionary attacks where you take a whole bunch of words, you just start generating hashes of all these words that you have, these dictionaries, and eventually you'll find the same hash as the password. So in other words, you're still open to forms of attack. It's not a guaranteed way just because you've hashed a password that it makes you more secure.
Yeah, and ideally, I love it when I go to a website and they have that little link like, forgot your password, you know, we'll email it to you, right? And so that's really great because email is obviously very secure. And so then you click the link and they send you, you know, email you your password. And then it occurs to me, well, if they can email my password, they know my password. Right, so they could impersonate me anytime, or anybody could steal it, or whatever. Right, so I think it's a much better practice for people to store the hash of passwords rather than storing people's passwords.
Correct, and that's typically what you do. You say you have a SQL Server database, and you store the hash of those passwords there. You send the hash on the wire, and then you can just compare those. And that's the common technique there. There was actually a good article written by Keith Brown about the username token type in Wizzy and some of these best practices around hashing and not hashing, which is referenced off the web services site off MSDN. That is worth going to see.
Yes.
Okay, so msdn.microsoft.com/web-services, and you'll find that there. All right, so there are some extensibility points, and we talked a little bit about this custom username token manager. So, Duane, how does that work?
Well, the custom username token manager, basically what you would do is configure the service application in its web.config file to use a different username token manager class to validate username tokens coming in on the wire. And what that allows you to do is that allows you to specify the behavior of how the token's validated. In this case, we leveraged the ASP.NET 2.0 provider API to allow us to kind of provide a layer of abstraction between our implementation and configuration, so that what we could do is we could go into configuration and we could change potentially the role store against which the credentials are validated, or I'm sorry, the identity store against which the credentials are validated, or the role store from where the roles are retrieved for the user. And that comes in handy, for example, if you've got different environments, for development and production, you want to, you know, keep your implementation consistent in how it works, but you know, for example, if you have to migrate something from database to Active Directory or something like that, it helps out in switching environments. Or again, if there's a greater degree of sophistication around how your username tokens have to be validated against which identity store, it would allow you to do that there.
Okay, so let's take a look at the walkthrough of the custom token manager. You know, and Donna, I have to say, I love these examples because, you know, I'm the kind of guy that learns from seeing something that works. You know, I want to see an app that works, and then I can look at all the little ways it does it, and they're so practical.
Do I have something for you, Ron? So what you'll find in the more information slide at the end of the deck is some links to the community around this web service security guide. And at the community site, you can download quick starts, which are, you're basically using the quick starts, aren't you, Duane?
Yeah, these are all the quick start codes. You can go to the workspace and download these as they are.
Yep. So all you have to do is go to the workspace address that we'll show you in a minute. It's on got.net. Join the workspace and download them and get happy.
And for free, too.
Of course.
All right. Oh, that's the wrong button. Okay. All right. Free. Wow, I love that. Okay. Let's see the custom token manager.
Okay, so what we're looking at here is our custom username token manager. It inherits directly from the username token manager that you find out of the box in Wizzy. And what we've done is we've overridden the authenticate token method. And what that does is when the username token manager pulls the token, security token, out of the message for the token type it's set up to validate, it gives you a place to specify how that happens. So in this case, we use the ASP.NET 2.0 membership provider here. We call the validate user method. And what we do is we pass in the token username and the token password. Based on the results of that, we know whether or not the user's been authenticated. If they haven't, we can throw exceptions, do whatever we need to do to let them know that we're not happy. After that, what we do is we create an identity, a generic identity, and a generic principal. And we attach that to the token so that we can use that for our authorization. So here, we create the new generic identity, and we specify the username that was passed in the username token. And then for the principal, we use the ASP.NET 2.0 membership provider API. We call into the role provider to get roles for the user to populate the principal. So you
notice I don't see anything in this code about looking up an LDAP or looking in a database, because that's somewhere else, right? That's
exactly
in those providers that I plugged into.
Right, and the provider configuration for the service is in its web.config. So here, in this particular service, we are using a SQL database. We're using a SQL Server to provide our authentication and our role store.
Oh, so you didn't even have to write any code at all for
this?
No,
there's no code change. It's just configuration change. So we could foreseeably go in there and change that to LDAP, or Active Directory or whatever supported through the provider or membership API in ASP.NET 2.0. We actually did play around too with the custom membership and role providers for doing things in a little more advanced scenario. So in reality, if you went off and you developed your custom membership providers, you could plug them in right here as well.
Oh, okay. So if you had to go off and, read the username information from a mainframe somewhere, you could do that custom role provider thing or authentication provider and go do that.
Or something strange, yeah.
Yeah.
Because a lot of your more common scenarios are pretty well supported out of the box.
Right, right. So that's
configuration for our custom token manager, username token manager, also lives in the web.config file. So here you can see we have a security token manager configuration. This tells the service to use something other than the default username token manager. So that custom username token manager class that we created, we tell it here in this configuration, hey, go use this class whenever you get a token of this type.
Oh, okay.
So this is the namespace there. And then the class. So basically we say go use type equals custom username token manager.
Yeah, effectively use up that class.
Ah, okay.
And so you effectively, the local name username token and the namespace, those are from the WS security specification, and that allows us to identify, oh, it's a username token you want to do, and we will new up that class and call us our authenticate token method on it.
Ah, love it. Okay, great. Well, that's not too bad. It's pretty simple, straightforward, using a username token.
One thing about those stores that is worth mentioning, I think it's worth talking about Adam and what that can do for you. Adam, I think of as like a lightweight, friendly Active Directory. Often, if I'm in Redmond and I want to create a new user account or manage my users, and I say I'm a manager of some users, I haven't got any control over my Redmond domain. They won't give me admin privileges to add and delete users.
Yeah, I don't think so. No.
So what I can do instead is I can use Adam, which it's effectively like an Active Directory for an application.
Yeah.
And I can use that, and it has same sort of APIs as Active Directory, and I can use that to store all of my roles and all of my authentication information for my users and authenticate against that.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, this is just one piece of information out of many in the Web Services Security Guidance, and we want to encourage you all to go and download that stuff. You can go to msdn.microsoft.com/practices and just get a ton of stuff, not just this, but many other things from Patterns and Practices. And there's that link, Don, to that all those quick start sources that you were looking for at practices.got.net.com/project/SOA patterns. So many, many good things there. You'll want to go there. Of course, you'll want to go and download WSI 3.0 Web Service Enhancements. And long link there. I'm not going to read that one.
Come on. We have time.
No. And future webcasts, well, they're all in the past now, sorry, but this is the last one. But you can listen to the previous ones on MSDN. If you go to MSDN, let me back up. Go to Microsoft.com/webcast. You'll find them there. But even better, I'm going to have these on my ArtCast show, which is ArtCast is a 30-minute podcast that you can download. So I kind of divide these into two chunks. You can download them, listen while you're in your car. See, Don, you listen to them, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Religiously.
All right, see, there you go. And you can listen to them and enjoy them. And the sound quality is really, really good. So better than what you're hearing today.
Even if you just listen to him, to listen to Ron introduce each of the talks, it's pretty comical.
Oh, yeah, right.
He writes all the music for him.
All right, so we have plenty of time, actually, for questions and answers. And what we're going to do is we're going to go to the survey slide. But before we do, you can submit your question there at the bottom. You can type in ask. You can have one question at a time. In fact, you know what, Eric, let me turn it over to our producer, okay. Eric. You take him through this.
All right, yeah, I would like to remind you, you can submit text questions using the Ask a Question button. I see there are in the queue. Would you like to answer a few of them for the audience with the time we have left?
Well, I'll read them anyway, and my guests will answer them. How about we do that? Okay, and you know what, so type away your questions, and let's get some of these. Here's someone who says, I had some trouble in figuring out how to authenticate against a legacy Complus authentication system. Now that I've done it, it seems easy, but it would be nice to see more examples on this. Well, Dwayne, we have a good example, right? And with that membership provider thing you just showed.
Well, the membership provider is specific to ASP.NET 2.0. However, the custom username token manager would be your extensibility point in WSI 3 to implement your authentication code. So if you want to run off and, you know, authenticate against a legacy authentication system, then you would implement that code there.
Okay, so but there's really two ways you could do this, if I understand right. So the first one that you just mentioned is the extensibility point in WSI. Mm-hmm. And the code that you had there was sort of boilerplate, just like, you know, pass it all down to ASP.NET membership and let it figure it out. And so the second extensibility point would be to use a custom provider at that level, at the ASP.NET
right.
level.
Yes.
If you wanted to go that way, you could
right.
do it.
You could go that route if you wanted to,
well,
definitely.
Well, you have iMembership Provider. And membership provider is just a class or an interface you can implement. And there's a whole bunch of methods on it. And there's one very important method called validate.
Yeah.
And that's the one that's effectively equivalent to authenticate token type. And those were equivalent. What Dwayne was getting to is that, you know, you may choose to implement that membership provider interface because of it plugs into a Visual Studio and allows you to do sort of tools-based support there as well. And you could choose implement a membership provider to do any form of specific authentication and yet take advantage of other facilities within inside Visual Studio. Or you could say, not do that, and I'll just use that authenticate token API call straight down to my legacy com or whatever call I want to do, and I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, I think the advantage of doing the membership provider would be that it would work for just an ASP.NET website as well as the WSI thing and whatever. So if you write that code once, you could use it in a bunch of places, right? Okay. Next question. Compare the username token with certificates policy with X509 certificate policy. Okay, so kind of we've talked about Kerberos, when you would use that. We've talked about X509 and now this username token. So where would we use these scenario-wise?
They're actually, while mechanically they're very close in terms of how they work, because the username token for certificate policy assertion actually uses the X509 certificates to secure the message. So they share a lot of similarities in that respect. However, you know, the purpose for using them is very different. In one situation, the one we talked about today with username token, the objective is to authenticate a user. You know, a user types in username, password. You know, that could result in a whole bunch of different things happening. It could just be the first step in a more complex scenario with brokered authentication where the service that you're actually presenting the username token to is some kind of security token service that issues a token that you can use to go call other things. It could just be a simple call to a web service that goes and talks to AD. You know, that there's this scenario that we talked about today is used in support of a variety of other scenarios. Whereas the X509 one that we talked about a few weeks ago is more focused. At least in my mind, if I were to look at it, it seems more applicable in sort of a B2B or an application to service type scenario where you've got, you know, some entity, a party, a business or a specific application that's authenticating against the service. Whereas in this scenario, I think of it more as authenticating a specific individual user.
It's about identity.
Yeah.
It's how do I want to identify the person contacting you? Do you want to identify them with a certificate that for that client, or do I identify them with a username password? And typically, a username password is more human-friendly, although, and generating certificates is more cryptographically secure because they're much more unique. There's more information on there that's harder to crack in terms of identifying or misinterpreting the identity of the user. What you can do is you can deploy certificates for all of those clients, and you'll get more cryptographic authenticity about who they are. And you can actually associate certificates with username accounts inside Active Directory. So given a particular certificate, you can use that certificate to authenticate who they are and then get back a logon credentials for that user. So, but of course, the disadvantage of certificates is you have the whole management side of it.
Yeah, it becomes a big nightmare, yeah.
So another thing I wanted to mention, though, is that I'd really encourage everyone to check out the Web Service Security Guide because the decision matrices that are in that guide do a really good job of distinguishing between when you would use username token versus X509 versus Kerberos. It gives you those decision points in a little bit more detail than we're able to cover in a webcast. So if you weren't happy with that answer, totally check out the guide. Even if you were happy with it, check out the guide anyway.
Okay.
It's good stuff.
All right. So, well, somebody's asking, where do we get the podcast? Hey, thanks. I'll send you a check, man. You go to channel9.msdn.com, which is our friends over at Channel 9 host my podcast, and there's a link for shows, and my show is called ArcCast. So look for the ArcCast show there on Channel 9, and it's audio only because we're far too ugly to put on camera. Okay, but you can listen to that. Okay, someone's asking for a quick demo.
Actually, about the podcast, what's cool is the RSS feed supports enclosures, and
yes.
So you can. It's totally the whole podcasting experience. So
yeah, and in fact, there's a nice .NET application called Doppler.
That's what
that's
I use.
Written with .NET. Yeah, and let me back up because I'm reading two things at once. Okay. Doppler is a good .NET program where you can download the podcast. You can subscribe to the RSS feed. And that's kind of what I use is like for podcasts I listen to, I just leave my laptop on at night. I have it checked during the night. In the morning I come and it's all downloaded and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
So we can't do a demo. We can't because we have to leave the web slide up. If we go to a demo, then people can't do the survey. And obviously we want to have the survey. Because we want to hear what people are thinking.
I can describe the next question.
Okay, well, describe it for us.
So the question is how do I put that little config entry in there inside the config file for the custom username token manager? Well, one of the great pieces of work we did do in WYSIWYG 3 was made that a lot easier. So effectively, you go to the context menu item that we saw, the WYSIWYG settings item, and pull up the WYSIWYG config editor, and you select the security tab with inside that, and you'll see that with inside there's a security token managers list, and you hit the add button and it brings up another little dialogue that allows you to select one of the username token managers you want to override, the built-in ones we provide, and one of those of course is username token manager. You simply select that and then it automatically populates that namespace field and the name, local name, and all then you have to do is type in the name of the CLR class that you want to put in there. So it'll be, you know, myclrclass.foo.
Okay.
You type it in there and hit OK, and then it'll write that config entry for you. So in other words, there's great tool support for writing that config entry.
It's very slick because if you base it off one of the built-in token types, like Mark said, you know, I just did it on my laptop here. as to kind of follow along. You know, I select username token manager, and everything that you saw in the configuration was filled out for me, and all I had to do was go back and change the type to the fully qualified class name of the username token manager class I wanted to use.
Excellent. All right. Well, guys, my battery's almost dead, and we're almost out of time, so we'll see you next time on Patterns and Practices Live. My thanks to my guests, Dwayne, Mark, and Don, our engineer Mark, and our producer Eric. Wow. You know, I have learned so much about tokens in WYSI. You know, X509 tokens and Kerberos tokens and username tokens. Man, hey, but that's why we're here. Isn't this fun? I get paid to, like, learn stuff, and you get to help and listen in. And so many of you have written me. I've been just really enjoying reading your notes. You can send me a note to ron.jacobs@microsoft.com. Here's one where Dale from up in Canada says that he's been listening to podcasts, and he says, I'm so geeky, I even listened to them on Saturday night. That is so geeky. Okay, but he says, I have many more podcasts and webcasts to listen to. So keep it up, Dale. We'll see you next time on our cast.